Chapter 34. The forensic analysis of residue material found in the GWU lab reached Martin's desk at 10 the next morning. After consulting with the lead investigative agent, Martin picked up the phone and called Pitt.
Dirk, I've got our first look at the lab site residue analysis. Afraid I can't release a copy of the report to you, however.
I understand, Pitt replied.
Can you give me the 30,000-foot view of the findings?
You were right on the money. Our lab analysts are nearly certain it was a planted explosive. They found trace samples of nitroglycerin all over the room.
Isn't that the explosive element of dynamite?
Yes, that's how it's packaged, in the familiar dynamite sticks.
Not high-tech, but it is a powerful explosive that carries a wicked punch.
I didn't realize they still made the stuff.
It's been around for years, but there's still a heavy industrial demand for it, primarily in underground mining.
Any chance of tracing its origin?
There are only a handful of manufacturers, and each uses a slightly different formula, so there is, in fact, an identifying signature in the compound. The lab has already matched the samples up with an explosives manufacturer in Canada.
That narrows things down a bit.
True, but chances are it will be the end of the line. We'll send some agents up to talk to the company and check their sales records, but I wouldn't be too hopeful. The odds are that the explosives were stolen from a mining customer who doesn't even know the stuff is missing. I just hope this isn't the start of some serial bombing campaign.
I'd bet against it, Pitt said. I think it was specifically targeted against Lane's research.
You're probably right. There was an additional finding that would support that theory. Our bomb analysts determined that the explosives were packed in a cardboard container. Unlike a pipe bomb, where the shrapnel from the pipe is intended to maim or kill, our bomber used a relatively benign approach. It does appear as if the explosion wasn't meant to kill, or certainly kill, in numbers.
A saving grace, Pitt replied, but I take it your work is just beginning.
Yes, the test results will blow the investigation wide open. We'll be talking to everyone in the building. That will be our next hope, that someone saw something or somebody out of place that will give us our next lead. Martin knew that random explosions were one of the worst crimes to investigate and often the most difficult to solve.
Thanks for the update, Dan, and good luck. If anything comes to me, I'll let you know.
Pitt hung up and walked down the hall to a briefing on NUMA's hurricane warning buoys in the Gulf of Mexico. He then cleared his afternoon calendar and made his way out of the headquarters building. The explosion at the GWU lab gnawed at his consciousness, and try as he might, he couldn't shake the feeling that there were serious consequences at play. He drove to the Georgetown University Hospital, hoping that Lisa had not yet been released. She was still in her room on the second floor, along with a squat man in a three-piece suit. The man rose from a corner chair and glared at Pitt as he entered.
It's all right, Agent Bishop, Lisa said from her bed. This is Dirk Pitt, a friend of mine.
The FBI agent nodded without emotion, then left the room to stand in the hallway.
Do you believe that? Lisa said, greeting Pitt.
The FBI has been questioning me all day, and now they won't leave me alone.
They must have a soft spot for pretty research biochemists, Pitt replied with a warm grin.
He was secretly thankful for the guard, knowing that Martin was taking the matter seriously.
Lane blushed at the comment.
Lauren phoned a short time ago, but didn't mention that you would be coming by.
I became a little concerned after hearing of the FBI's investigation, he said. He noted that Lisa looked vastly improved since his last visit. Her color had returned, her eyes were clear, and her voice was strong. But a leg cast and a shoulder sling indicated that she was still far removed from participating in a game of Twister.
What's going on? They haven't told me anything, she said, giving him a pleading look.
They think it may have been a planted bomb that blew up.
I figured that's what they were driving at, she said in a whisper. I just can't believe that would be true.
They apparently found residue of an explosive material in your lab. I know that it is hard to figure. Do you have any enemies, personal or professional, that might have a grudge?
went all through that with the FBI agents this morning, she said, shaking her head. There's not a soul I know who could even conceive of doing such an act. And I know the same goes for Bob.
It's possible the explosives were placed in your lab at random, perhaps by some crazy who had a beef with the university.
That is the only rationale I can think of. Though Bob and I always lock the lab when nobody's there.
There is another possibility, Pitt offered. Do you think a competitor might be threatened by the results of your research? Lisa contemplated the question for a moment.
I suppose it is possible.
I've published papers related to my general research, and there are far-reaching effects. But the fact is, only you, Lauren, and Bob were aware of my catalyst breakthrough. Nobody else even knew. It seems hard to believe someone could react so quickly if they were indeed aware of the discovery.
Pitt remained silent as Lisa looked out the window for a moment.
It seems to me that a working means of artificial photosynthesis would have only a positive benefit. I mean, who could possibly be hurt by a reduction in greenhouse gases?
Answer that, and we have a potential suspect, Pitt said.
He eyed a wheelchair parked along the opposite side of the bed.
When are they going to cut you loose from here?
The doctor said tomorrow afternoon, most likely. Not soon enough for me. I'd like to get back to work and write up my findings.
You can resurrect the test results? Pitt asked.
Conceptually, it's all still up here, she said, tapping a finger to her head. I'll have to borrow a bit of lab equipment to redocument things, however.
That's providing the Ontario Miners Co-op can come up with another sample of ruthenium.
Your source of the mineral?
Yes. It's very costly. The stuff may end up being my downfall.
You should be able to obtain more grant money now, I would think.
It's not just the cost of the ruthenium. It's the actual availability. Bob says it is almost impossible to find.
Pitt thought a moment, then smiled at Lisa.
Don't worry. Things will work out. I better not interrupt your convalescence anymore. If you need someone to push your wheelchair, don't hesitate to call.
Thanks, Dirk. You and Lauren have been too kind. As soon as I'm mobile, you two are invited for dinner.
I can't wait.
Pitt made his way back to his car, noting the time was nearly 5:30. Following a hunch, he called Lauren and told her he would be late, then drove back to the Numa building. Riding the elevator to the 10th floor, he exited into the heart of the agency's computer operations. An imposing array of the latest information processors and storage devices held an unequaled repository of data on the world's oceans. Up to the second, current, tide, and weather conditions from satellite-fed sea buoys gave an instant snapshot of every major body of water around the globe. The computer system also housed a mountain of oceanographic research materials, allowing instant access to the latest findings in marine science. Pitt found a man in a ponytail seated at a large console, arguing with an attractive woman standing a few feet in front of him. Hiram Yeager was the architect of the Numa Computer Center and an expert in database management. Though dressed eclectically in a tie-dyed t-shirt and cowboy boots, Yeager was a devoted family man who doted on his two teenage daughters. Pitt knew Yeager always made breakfast for his wife and daughters and often sneaked away to soccer games and concert recitals in the afternoon, making up the lost time during the evening hours. As Pitt walked near, he marveled, as he always did, that the woman arguing with Yeager was not real, but rather a hologram that looked remarkably three-dimensional. Designed by Yeager himself as a computer interface to the vast network system, the holographic woman was modeled after his wife and affectionately named Max.
Mr. Pitt, can you please straighten out Hiram? Max said, turning toward Pitt. He doesn't want to believe me when I tell him a woman's handbag should match her shoes.
I always trust what you have to say, Pitt replied with a nod.
Thank you. There you have it, she turned, lecturing Yeager.
Fine, fine, Yeager replied, throwing up his hands. Some help you are in picking out a birthday present for my wife.
Yeager turned toward Pitt.
I should never have programmed her to argue like my wife, he said, shaking his head. Pitt took a seat next to him. He wanted her to be as lifelike as possible, he countered with a laugh.
Tell me you have something to talk about besides ladies' fashions, he pleaded. As a matter of fact, I'd like Max to help me with a few mineralogy questions.
A welcome change of topics,
Max replied, peering down her nose at Jaeger.
I'm delighted to help you, Director. What is it that you would like to know?
For starters, what can you tell me about the mineral ruthenium?
Max closed her eyes for a second, then spoke rapidly. Ruthenium is a transition metal of the platinum group, known for its hardness. Silvery white in color, it is the 44th element, also known by its symbol Ru. The name derives from the Latin word rus, from which Russia originates. A Russian geologist, Karl Klaus, made its discovery in 1844.
Are there any unique demands or uses of the mineral? Pitt asked.
Its qualities as a hardener, especially when combined with other elements, such as titanium, were highly valued in industry. Supply irregularities have produced a sharp rise in prices recently, forcing manufacturers to turn to other compounds.
How expensive can it be? Asked Jaeger.
It is one of the rarest minerals found on Earth. Recent spot market prices have exceeded $12,000 an ounce.
Wow, Jaeger replied. That's 10 times the price of gold. Wish I owned a ruthenium mine.
Hiram raises a good question, Pitt said. Where is the stuff mined?
Max frowned for a moment as her computer processors sifted through the databases.
The supplies are rather unsettled at the moment. South Africa and the Ural Mountains of Russia have been the historical sources for mined ruthenium in the last century. Approximately 10 metric tons a year was mined in South Africa from a single mine in Bushveld, but their output peaked in the 1970s and fell to nearly zero by 2000. Even with the run-up in price, they've had no new production.
In other words, their mines have played out, Pitt suggested.
Yes, that is correct. There have been no significant discoveries made in the region in over 40 years.
That still leaves the Russians, Jaeger said.
Max shook her head. The Russian ruthenium came from just 2 small mines adjacent to one another in the Vissim Valley. Their production had actually peaked back in the 1950s. A severe landslide destroyed and buried both mining operations several years ago. The Russians have abandoned both sites, stating it would take many years to return either mine to operation.
No wonder the price is so steep, Jaeger said. What's your interest in the mineral, Dirk?
Pitt described Lisa Lane's artificial photosynthesis discovery and the role of ruthenium as a catalyst, along with the explosion in the lab. Jaeger let out a low whistle after digesting the implications.
That's going to make an unsuspecting mine owner a rich man, he said.
Only if the stuff can be found, Pitt replied. Which makes me wonder, Max, where would I go to purchase a bulk quantity of ruthenium?
Max looked up toward the ceiling. Let's see. There are 1 or 2 Wall Street precious commodities brokers that would be able to sell you some for investment purposes, but the quantities available are quite small. I'm only finding a small platinum mine in South America that has trace byproduct quantities for sale, which would require further processing. The present known stocks of the mineral appear to be quite meager. The only other publicized source is the Ontario Miners Co-op, which lists a limited quantity of high-grade ruthenium available by the troy ounce.
The co-op is where Lisa obtained her sample, Pitt stated. What more can you tell me about it?
The Miners Co-op represents independently owned mines across Canada, acting as wholesale outlet for mined ore. Their headquarters is in the town of Blind River, Ontario.
Thank you, Max. You've been a great help as always, Pitt said.
He had long ago transcended his uneasiness at speaking to the computerized image and, like Jaeger, almost felt like Max was a real person.
A pleasure any time,
Max replied with a nod. Turning to Jaeger, she admonished,
Now don't you forget about my advice for your wife.
Goodbye, Max, Jaeger replied, tapping at a keyboard. In an instant, Max disappeared from view. Jaeger turned to Pitt.
A shame your friend's discovery may be for naught if there's no ruthenium around to power the process.
As important as the ramifications are, a source will be found, Pitt said confidently.
If your hunch about the lab explosion is correct, then somebody else already knows about the scarcity of the mineral.
Pitt nodded.
My fear as well. If they are willing to kill to halt the research, then they are probably willing to try and monopolize the remaining supplies.
So where do you go from here?
There's only one place to go, he said. The Ontario Miners Co-op, to see how much ruthenium really is left on the planet.